Continuing our season outlook series with the Indiana Pacers today, another team that performed some massive, some might even say unnecessary, offseason surgery. We'll see whether our guest agrees with my assessment of that or not. And here he is, Jared Wade from 8 points, 9 seconds. Actually, we were talking before we came on the air that you were the first person who actually gave me or actually published my writing outside of my own Blogspot site.
Well, that's crazy. I mean, yeah, I remember it happening, but as we were saying, like, yeah, it's so long ago that the memory's a little foggy, but I guess it was a good start for you. I don't know, it's doing pretty well. You're doing pretty well, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'll definitely always be grateful to you for taking advantage of my free labor like that. No, I'm just kidding.
I certainly didn't pay you anything.
Yeah, but I mean, it was just like a little piece on, it started off with just some gifs on Roy Hibbert's pick and roll, which actually he was good at one point in time, at least one very short point in time. But that is ancient history now. That is like two different iterations of this Pacers team. So I want to, obviously they brought in Jeff Teague, traded away George Hill for him, traded the number 20 pick, which became Caris LeVert, for Thaddeus Young, signed Al Jefferson, let Jan Mahimi go in free agency. What are your overall impressions of that offseason? Did they get better? Did they get worse? What were you thinking as that was going on?
Well, I would say as it was happening, I think in a vacuum was good. You could argue, you know, Jeff Teague versus George Hill overall, who's a better player. I think it's pretty, I've written several times, it's pretty much the same. It's kind of they're very different style players. You know, what do you need? Do you need someone who is going to be more of a caretaker point guard who can hit shots and play defense? Or do you need someone who's going to run the ball up on the floor and score points and be more aggressive? As far as their actual caliber of doing that, I think they're pretty similar. So I think, and just for change's sake, I was kind of, I don't want to say happy about that, but it'll be more interesting to cover from my standpoint. So that move was a good welcome one.
Let me stop you there, because I was actually pretty critical of that trade. I thought that George Hill was underrated. I thought that he had a great 14-15, and then they brought in Ellis, which I thought kind of neutered the additional playmaking that he'd shown in that year. I think he's really good defensively, really good spot-up shooter, but certainly someone who has been kind of a whipping boy over the years for Pacers fans, at least until his contract grew into being a little bit of a better one as the cap went up. But it's interesting. I think Larry Bird certainly sees it as an upgrade. I mean, Jeff Teague was an all-star 2 years ago. I like George Hill better, though Teague is younger, so there's that to be said for it. But you just see that as kind of six of one, half dozen the other?
Pretty much. I mean, I think it's 2 years younger, almost exactly. Their contract is almost exactly the same. They're both expiring deals this year. There was some talk about trying to get an extension with T going. I don't think that really ever went anywhere. But I mean, you know, he's from Indiana. It's the same thing. It's kind of crazy. They're both from Indiana even. So I think there is the idea that as long as he has a good season, he'll want to stay and they can re-sign him, you know, for whatever you consider a reasonable contract nowadays. You know, the numbers are so stupid that it's hard to even put anything on it. But maybe he'll re-sign for a reasonable $23 million a year or something. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard because I'm not really a fan of the team. I was at one point. I'm kind of now just a follower of it and, you know, someone who reports about them. So while I do like George Hill, he's kind of boring. There was, like you said, last year, I would kind of call it the lost season, the one that Paul George missed all of.
Yeah.
And actually, George Hill was fairly injured quite a bit. I think he played 50-something games. I don't know the exact number. But he had kind of at least like 2 months of that where he was super aggressive. And David West missed a fair amount of time. So he kind of had to be. If you look at his usage rate, it was definitely like a career high. But he's never really had a high usage rate other times, and that can be a benefit, obviously. But I don't know, just when Monte Ellis was there and Paul George, he just kind of went back to his very passive role. And yeah, Pacers fans were upset about that. And I think somewhat understandably, the offense was bad again. It's been bad every year under Frank Vogel. I think you can kind of lay the blame on one guy, mainly Frank Vogel. But George Hill showed that he can do that, but he just kind of is unwilling to do that. So at that point, I think it was kind of interesting to make a change and go to someone who, in Jeff Teague, I think, you know, he's going to get shots up regardless of what you think about him. He's going to get the ball up down the floor and he's going to get shots up.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, that 2014-15 was such a weird year. I think the fact that they managed to win 38 games, I think, that year and were very close to making the playoffs was pretty remarkable. Hill had a 21.5 PR, only 43 games, 58% true shooting, and 24% usage. And the 2 years were on that 14.8 and 15.8% usage. So clearly for the rest of his career, he has not been that sort of playmaker. So you can definitely make the argument that they needed more of that at the position. I thought that they kind of had enough. All right, if you're already going to get Monte Ellis, then George Hill is a great guy to go next to him. I mean, that's the other thing that's a little bit of a concern about the move. To me, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, but that's what we do on this show. Hill was so effective next to Ellis defensively because he could just guard whoever the bigger threat was in the backcourt. Now with Teague and Ellis, I don't think that whether it's point guards or shooting guards, you know, especially if the other team has a wing threat that Paul George has got to deal with, that I think they're going to be they have one guy who's average and one guy who's markedly below now defending in the backcourt.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I was going to kind of get to was that. So I think each of the moves and the Thaddeus Young move as well as the Al Jefferson move, when they happened, I was kind of like, oh, that's an upgrade. Or if we argue the George Hill one, but the other ones are clear upgrades, Thaddeus Young over nobody and Al Jefferson coming on board. But it was kind of like an odd fit all around. And that's what you're saying. Jeff Teague and Monte Ellis as a backcourt is going to be heinous defensively. I mean, they're both small. Neither one of them really defend. I mean, Jeff Teague's not terrible, but, you know, who's guarding a shooting guard in that? When Paul George is guarding LeBron or Kevin Durant or Kawhi, who's checking the other guy on the team that's 6'4", 6'6", next to him? George Hill could do that. Jeff Teague cannot. Monte Ellis cannot. So it could be a complete train wreck.
One of my favorite products that we've ever had on the show is the Naked 3D Body Scanner, the world's first home body scanner. The way it works is you step onto it, a scale rotates you around in a matter of about 20 seconds, and scanners embedded in a mirror in front of you take a 3D image of your entire body. What's the use of this? Well, it can tell you what your body fat is in an accurate way, which is huge. There are not that many systems out there that will do that. It can also let you know what the circumference is of various body parts in case you have some sort of an imbalance. You can see it and correct it. And perhaps most importantly, it'll create what's called a heat map where it compares your scan with previous scans of yourself and determines whether you've gained muscle, lost fat, and shows you exactly where that's occurred. It's really hard to motivate a lot of times working out in those first 2-3 weeks because the naked eye isn't going to notice anything. The scale, you're going to fluctuate a lot just based on water weight or if you're putting on muscle and losing fat, the scale is not going to tell you that. But this can catch differences that are not perceptible on a day-to-day basis just looking in the mirror. And that's really, really motivating. That kind of progress can be the difference with sticking with a fitness regimen. And it's something that you can keep for years and years. These scanners have always cost more than $10,000, really only available at certain health clubs that charge a ton to get scanned. But you can get yours now for only $699. Lock in that price. And when it comes out in the spring of 2017, you can be among the first to get yours. It's going to cost $1,000 then, but you lock in that price now, and you only have to put down a $95 deposit as well. You can find out more about the product and also let them know that you came from us by entering the URL naked.fit, FIT/capspace. Capspace is easy to remember. We talk about it all the time on the program. Naked.fit/capspace is the URL to let them know that you came from us and get started on really changing your fitness regimen by getting accurate measurements. Naked.fit/capspace is that URL.
All right. So who do you see as a candidate to get better this year? We can say either among the holdovers or even the guys that they brought in as well.
I think the team, I wouldn't say it's a complete success rests on this, but its ability to reach its ceiling, which I actually think is pretty high, is Miles Turner. I mean, he showed some signs in the playoffs last year and just in the regular season as well that, I mean, he has all-star talent. I mean, he's got an 18, 20-footer. I mean, there's talk about him getting out beyond the three-point line. I think that might be a little premature to do as a 20-year-old. I feel like he needs to get a little more down low and kind of learn some of that game before he completely stretches himself out and becomes that kind of a player. But, I mean, he can block shots. He had this kind of iconic block on LeBron last year in the regular season. You know, he still gets pulled out of position. He's 19, he was 20 years old now. So he's not a fantastic defender as far as the nuanced stuff that you need to learn in the NBA, but I think he's headed in that way. I just think he's going to be real good. And it's kind of, will he be good this year, or are we still talking another 2 or 3 years before he kind of gets to that point?
Yeah, they have a lot riding on him getting up to speed defensively. I do think with him starting at center, his ability to space the floor, at least from the long two areas, if not from the three-point line quite yet this year, is going to be useful. And I think that they should at least have a little bit better of an offense this year than they did last year. But I do think that relying on him to get the nuances of pick and roll defense, I mean, down the stretch, I want to say in games 5 and 7 of that Raptors series highlighted it pretty well, that he has a long way to go in that respect. But he should also be better now, not playing as the center instead of having to play next to Jan Mahimi and run after guys at the three-point line. Like, that was something that he's just not really going to be able to do generally. So yeah, I agree with you. If he could turn into, because he has this potential, turn into being a great defensive center now already, then that changes the complexion of this team a lot. Because I think the biggest reason in my mind that a lot of these moves aren't going to work as well as people think is because I expect them to take a pretty severe step back on defense this year. But if he's great, maybe that doesn't happen.
Exactly. And I think another thing you can look towards is he missed 6 weeks last year. So with a broken thumb, you know, so nothing significant, just kind of like a freaky thing. So when he was kind of even ramping up to the playoffs, he was still kind of behind, you know, the game was still probably faster than him than it would have been if he had not missed those 20 games or whatever. And everyone says he's a very good learner. He's working hard in the gym, blah, 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 all the preseason crap. But, you know, that's supposed to be valid with him. And he does kind of take it hard on himself. He did talk about his own defense last year. And even in the preseason last year, he was kind of talking about, he's like, people are going to be surprised about my ability to defend the perimeter. And we didn't really see that. I don't think he really understood what the NBA perimeter D-men. I mean, I remember one game against Dallas where, you know, and he was playing the four, like you say, next to Mahimi, but they put in Chandler Parsons and he had to guard Chandler Parsons for like 6 possessions. And it's just a train wreck. He just has no business like getting out there. So he needs to get that up on that. And he does have a little bit of foot speed issues as far as like lateral movement and stuff that he, you know, just can't be overcome in 1 year or maybe ever. But I think he is probably going to be better. And with that young playing the four and the five, you know, they should be acceptable. But a lot of it does. A lot of the defense, it hinges on him. I mean, the perimeter is going to be a sieve. Paul George is going to be Paul George. I think Thad Young's fine, but I mean, without Mahimi as a backstop, if he can't get it going, they could start off the season really bad.
Yeah, Mahimi was a lot better, I think, than many realize. Last year, he was one of the top 10 centers in the league in defensive RPM. He had a really good year the year before, too, when Roy Hibbert actually missed it a bunch of time, and they didn't really see much of a drop-off when Mahimi played as well. So I do think that they could very easily miss him. Yeah, you know, it is interesting, too, going down this roster, other than Miles Turner, you would be hard-pressed to find someone that you think, all right, is clearly going to be better than last year. Maybe you could say Paul George would take another step forward. To me, he shot great the first couple of months of the year, but also I think is in a new phase and was every bit the player that he had been beforehand in terms of his overall performance. But he also, I think, did lose some bounce from before the injury, which, you know, is to be expected. It was a pretty severe injury, but, you know, he's not doing like Vince Carter dunk contest 360s on the break game. Or what do you think of him? Do you think he can be better this year?
I think definitely. I mean, I don't know if he's going to get better than like his peak, because last year in November, I mean, he won player of the month, which whatever that's worth, but he was probably the second best player in the league other than, you know, Steph, who was in God mode at the time. And then against the Raptors, I don't know exactly what his average, I think he was averaged 27, 28 for the series. I think he had one bad game and maybe 19 or something, but he dropped 30, 37 in one, and I think he had 31 in another. He kind of bookended his season as incredible. And then middle of the season, I think it was like, I don't know the exact dates, but like December 15th-ish to February. I mean, I think he shot over that stretch like 39% from the floor. So, and he was talking about his legs were a little dead and you could kind of tell. And that was probably the most apparent area when you kind of said he lost some bounce. He just looked a little tired. He was forcing things. He's prone to some sloppy turnovers anyways, but he was doing that a little more. So I think, I don't know if he can be better than he was at his best last year because he was incredible at times, but I think he cannot have that drop off and just be more consistent. And I think we saw in the Olympics and stuff, like, you know, he just seems a little more mature. Even just listening to a talk, he sounds like he's like a full veteran now. Whereas 2 years ago, when before the leg thing, he would just still sound weird in press conferences. You could tell the game was still a little fast for him. He was still trying to prove himself, you know, kind of all those young NBA rising star things. Last year was still getting back to just being in the NBA. So I think this year, I assume he'll be better. Yeah.
Yeah, and then beyond him, you would have to look at a Joe Young type or Glenn Robinson, guys like that who really were on the fringes of the rotation last year, to maybe take a step forward and give them some rotation minutes. And, you know, they also lost Solomon Hill off of last year's team too. Just, he didn't play that much during the regular season, but I thought was part of why they were pretty good in the playoffs, and to me probably should have played more. What do you think about as far as regression candidates for these guys?
I was actually going to say, I think CJ Miles and Rodney Stuckey can both play better.
Yeah.
CJ started off the year kind of playing the four. I don't know if you remember, because like Bird said Paul George was going to play the four, and Paul George was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. And it was kind of one of those things where I understood both sides. You know, Bird wanted the team to play faster and play smaller, you know, kind of like the trend. And Paul George was like, well, that's cool, but you're going to have to find someone else to do it, because I just broke my leg. I'm not battling with Zach Randolph. You know what I mean? So I get it from both sides. But I guess Frank Vogel lauded CJ Miles for basically stepping up and saying, I'll do it. Like, for the first month of the season, the Pacers were really good because they were hitting tons of threes. CJ Miles played that role. He was guarding the big guys and everything, and it kind of wore him down. He missed a lot of games. He had kind of ankle, knee, lower leg problems for a while, and he never really got back to himself until right towards the end of the year. So they need him, because while he's not a knockdown shooter, he's a pretty good shooter, and they don't have much shooting on the roster. I mean, other than him, Paul George is really the only thing there. We mentioned Miles Turner, but different type of shooting and also still young.
Yeah, maybe CJ could be a little bit better. In the aggregate, he shot, I think, a little bit better than he normally does on threes. He was almost 37%. And he takes a lot of tough attempts, too. I was actually at their game. I'm in New Orleans right now. I was at their preseason game on Tuesday, and just as a fan, but I paid some attention at least. And it's remarkable how many threes he will take coming off of screens, not quite squared up. So he is at least somewhat of a threat there, and he's got a little bit more length than people kind of remember. So yeah, he might be better. But, you know, if you look at guys in terms of just what their age is, where they are on their the arc of their career, I mean, Monte Ellis, for example, had probably, you would have to say, maybe the worst year of his career last year, and his usage rate was only 21%, you know, so it's not like he was eating up a bunch of possessions, and he still wasn't very efficient. His true shooting percentage was 500, and as we know, he's not giving anything on defense. So I think he could even get a little bit worse as a small guard who's reliant on athleticism. Teague shot 40% on threes last year, which is quite the outlier for his career. You wouldn't expect that would necessarily continue, and they're going to need him to make some spot ups. He was missing on Tuesday when I saw him, and teams going under on him has always been a problem when he was in Atlanta too. Who else do you think of as potential regression candidates outside of those guys, unless you disagree with me on those guys?
No, I mean, I do. I expect Monte to be better. I'm admittedly a little in the can for Monte. I like him more than the average Pacer fan does, certainly, and I kind of always liked him when he was even in Dallas and stuff. Supposedly he was pretty hurt last year.
Oh yeah.
Paul George came out recently saying like he saw what Monte was going through, and he's a warrior. You know, it was kind of those just nagging knee stuff and everything all year, and Paul George, I know it's the same thing you hear a lot of Monte. You know, fans and maybe even his teammates are a little aggravated him by him times, but they seem to have a ton of respect for him. And he did. He was also credited, like you say, with the low usage. You know, he was being a playmaker. He was passing. He didn't. You know, he's Monte Ellis, so at times it happened, but he didn't seem to be taking crazy shots that often. And he was trying hard on defense, at least early in the year. So I think, I don't know, I expect him to be better. I don't think he's so old that his quickness is gone, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that may be the case. But on the other hand, I'm not sure that this roster plays to his strengths either, because he likes to get to the basket, but there's not going to be that much spacing. You know, they don't really have a ton of guys who are great shooters. Although there's nobody, at least they have the advantage that there's nobody that you just don't have to guard at all out there, you know, at least even from long two range in the starting lineup. But, you know, Thad Young and Teague, those are all kind of just like slightly below average three-point shooters for their position. George obviously has to be guarded, and Turner is probably a little bit above average for a center. Let's talk a little bit, though, just about the national perception. I always like this on for some of the smaller market teams in particular. Who is someone who might be a little bit underrated by just sort of your casual NBA fan on this team?
I don't know. I mean, it's a little hard because the whole team's new, right? Like, they're kind of new to me. I mean, most of them are veterans, so I know them. But, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I watched Thad Young play many games for Brooklyn last year. You know, I've been a big fan of his throughout his career. I liked him in Minnesota, and I even liked him as a Sixer. But, you know, like, I did not watch 5 Brooklyn games last year. Who would?
I did. I think I might have made it to, like, 6.5. No, actually, I try to watch like 15 games of each team, so that was and I think I succeeded with them. It was mostly early in the year, but yeah, it's I will say that I do not quite have the level of familiarity with some of their guys as I might like to. I'll admit to that.
The one I was actually going to say was Aaron Brooks. You know, in the sense that I don't think he's a fantastic player, but coming off the bench as someone who just needs to get the ball to Al Jefferson and kind of hopefully keep the pace going, I think he can be effective for them. And if not, I guess it's also good because it's like you've got Joe Young, who I don't really have a lot of faith in. He can score. I don't really think he has the nuanced understanding of the game yet to be a guy who can get the ball to Al Jefferson, which I think is what that second unit needs to be kind of focusing on as far as putting points on the board. But I think Aaron Brooks can have a pretty good little season off the bench, and I don't think anyone's really even remembering that he's on the team.
That's true. Yeah, he didn't play on Tuesday. I had almost kind of forgotten that too. I think we'll also just see a lot of Monte kind of running the second unit. We saw some of that in the playoffs and probably should have seen more of it, frankly, because, you know, remember that disastrous stint in Game 5 where they had Lawson at the point and kind of threw away what was, I can't remember, it was like a 13 point lead or something in the fourth quarter of that Game 5 on the road. You said you're not a fan of the team anymore, so I feel okay reminding you about that.
No, it's fine. Yeah. I was looking, you know, I still want them to do well because, like, you know, it's fun to write about a good team, right?
And then,
I mean, they were about to win that game, and then they were going to be up whatever and probably win the series. And, yeah, it was kind of crazy. But, yeah, no, I think maybe their best starting lineup, and I don't know if they'll get to this, there's questions about whether Monte Ellis would accept a bench role. I think their best team would be him as a sixth man and have C.J. Miles start at the two.
I agree with you completely. They should have done that last year.
Exactly. Yeah, he can defend more people. He can stretch the floor. As you say, he's streaky and he takes some bad shots, but people defend him. You know, sometimes it doesn't matter your percentage as much as your reputation as far as drawing the defense.
I would say Thad Young could be a little bit underrated on this team. He's never really been on one of the premium teams that people pay a lot of attention to. Brooklyn really turned their season around 2 years ago when they had him. I like the fact that he can switch pretty well. He can guard most power forwards. There are very few power forwards now that you're really scared of him trying to guard. He actually did a pretty good job on Anthony Davis, although Davis is kind of working his way back still. But, you know, just in person, he wasn't getting beasted by Anthony Davis down in the post or anything. And that's one of your better post-up power forwards in this day and age. So I like his versatility. I would like it if he could shoot threes a little bit better. I would like it if he could use that appendage on the right side of his body because he basically never shoots with his right hand. But yeah, I still think that he is underrated. I think he's a solid starter. And he also, to me, is their biggest hope for maintaining the good defense that they've had in previous years, because I do think that he can be a little bit of an upgrade defensively over what they had at power forward last year.
No, yeah, I agree. It's really hard for me because I kind of see two ways this going. It could just be a dumpster fire because of mainly the Monte Ellis, Jeff Teague kind of overlap. They have similar skill sets. You know, they do similar things. So if that works out well somehow and Nate McMillan pulls it off and again, that's a new coach as well. You're throwing a lot of new stuff into this mix. I think it could work. But then if you have those guys both just trying to drive the lane all the time, no one making shots, say Miles Turner gets hurt in the first month somehow, you know, it could all go sideways pretty quickly. So there's that side. And then I think go really well and everyone's going to flow and you know, Monte and Teague will kind of be picking the right spots to try to do the same things and kind of doing them at different times and confusing the defense and have giving them no way to really guard anyone. And in that situation, I think Thaddeus Young could be great. You know, he could, he's a very good cutter, getting to the basket for lobs, you know, weak side offensive rebound putbacks, even these, you know, little pinch post post-ups he likes to do. I think he could be really fantastic if he's the, you know, he becomes the guy who's just kind of like lurking around and the teams lose track of a lot. I mean, he's fantastic in those roles.
Yeah, he can get out in transition, which is the strength of his too. So we started to hit on these a little bit, but to the extent we haven't discussed any of them yet, what do you see as kind of the playing time lineup issues? And I almost said Coach Vogel, that Coach McMillan is going to have to sort out.
I don't know. I don't know if there's that many really, because they have about the right number of players in the same roles. You get Aaron Brooks to come in for Teague, kind of can duplicate what he does on a lower level. Same thing with Rodney Stuckey of Monte Ellis. CJ Miles comes in and does what Paul George does in a much, 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 much worse way, but, you know, similar style. And then you're going to change styles by getting Al Jefferson in there, but I don't really see it, because then you have this collection of bigs on the bench with Kevin Serafin probably is the most likely to be the fourth guy, or you have LaVoy Allen who's proven that he can just say mop up minutes, I guess. You know, he's a professional basketball player.
Best net rating on the team last year, LaVoy Allen.
He did.
Yeah. I think
Jeremy Evans is another body you could throw in there as, you know, someone who mops up 6 minutes a game if he's any good at all, you know. So I don't really see they have much. I mean, the Joe Young thing, I think he won't play unless Aaron Brooks proves himself unable. But I think they have that's pretty well set. I think the lineup and rotation is pretty well. It's pretty obvious, so that doesn't cause like complications.
Yeah, I agree with you. This probably has some of the fewest playing time battles of any team in the league. I think how the minutes are distributed between Ellis, Stuckey, and CJ Miles will be something to watch for me, and whether maybe someone like GR3 can break into the lineup. I probably don't think that he will. My personal preference is for Miles to play more over Ellis and Stuckey, just because I think he spaces the floor for some of these other guys. And with Young, Turner, Teague, Paul George, obviously still the star on this team, you've got enough guys kind of in the starting lineup who can create shots. I mean, Al Jefferson is another one too, not in the starting lineup, but they have a lot of shot creators. And so I think spacing the floor around them, I think Miles probably is the best out of those three guys defensively as well, though that's perhaps damning with faint praise. So if Miles plays more than those guys, I think that could lead to them being a little bit better, and Miles actually has, you know, real shooting guard size. That'll be interesting to see. And then also backup point guard, you mentioned Brooks. I think that Brooks, he can shoot you into some games for sure, but also there are times where he was just jacking up shots and is just going to be missing, and then maybe they'll need another option there, and then maybe it could be Ellis going with the second unit as well. And then maybe two, there could be some games where Al Jefferson just has it rolling, where Miles Turner is just making too many mistakes, and they just decide that they're going to go with him to close games. But Jefferson is not exactly an upgrade on Turner defensively. And so, I mean, it wouldn't absolutely shock me to see LaVoy Allen maybe close like 7 or 8 games this year, just because Turner and Jefferson are like not getting it done defensively.
Yep. No, I could see that. And I think they're going to go small to the CJ Miles point a little bit. You know, whether Paul George refuses to call himself a four again or whatever. I think we'll see some Teague, Ellis, Paul George, CJ Miles, and a big, you know, probably most likely Miles Turner, but whoever it happens to be. And so they even put that lineup up there with Thaddeus Young for, you know, a 2-minute stretch here and there. You know, you get this kind of, not that he's any Draymond Green, but, you know, kind of a little like poor man's lineup of death situation. And you know, they could run some teams off the floor for these 2-minute stretches here and there.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe Miles will end up being sort of the backup for as well. I mean, whether he or Allen plays more could really determine their identity on the second unit. And you would think with Jefferson playing LaVoy Allen next to him really would compromise the spacing for Jefferson. So it might make a lot more sense to go with someone like Miles, or even maybe bring in Paul George to play with Jefferson as well. And, you know, let Ellis and Teague kind of run the show when George is out of the game instead. And they should, that's one thing that I think they should be a little better with this year, is offense when George is on the bench. especially during the playoffs. Yeah. They just absolutely collapsed when George was out of the game, and hopefully they'll have a little bit more depth. I mean, they have all these shot creators. I think too many, and too many of them are inefficient. That's a little bit suboptimal. But the way that that does help, at least, is that you're better in your bench units when you're not going to necessarily have great, efficient creators out there with your superstars off the floor.
Yeah, and one thing that you brought up that I think most people don't even realize he's on the team is Glenn Robinson III. He's got some skills. He has a good amount of talent, and he showed it a few times. You know, he was in the rotation a little bit. There was kind of a middle of the season when the team was struggling a little more. There was Chase Budinger, Solomon Hill, and Glenn Robinson III were all kind of like in the middle there getting a little bit of a shot. And he was always kind of like taken away because Vogel is such a stickler for defense. You know, if you blow a few assignments, you're never going to play again. That's kind of just his deal. And I don't think Nate McMillan will be like that. So if he unleashes Glenn Robinson a little bit more, and I mean, he's a real good cutter. He can make buckets. He's definitely good in transition. But there's a possibility that he makes the rotation and kind of like, you know, pushes Rodney Stuckey to the 10th, 11th man role. And then, you know, you've got a very deep, you know, it's not fantastic talent level from 8 to 11, but you've got a really, really deep team that gives a lot of lineup options. And Glenn Robinson has a little size. I mean, he's not tall, but like CJ Miles, you know, he can kind of, he's got a little girth to him and can kind of defend some players bigger than him.
This is probably as good a time as any to talk about the coaching change. You had kind of a throwaway early on talking about how you felt like you put a lot of their offensive issues in past years at the feet of Frank Vogel. Now they have Nate McMillan. Larry Bird wants to play faster, though they were 10th in pace last year already. So although that can be a misleading stat, what differences do you expect to see now that Nate McMillan is running the show instead of Vogel?
Well, Paul George said after their first preseason game that they have so much more freedom now. I think he was like, we're just like free flowing. And he sounded very positive about that as someone who likes to take shots and have freedom and maybe doesn't need as much freedom as he will be given. We'll see that. But yeah, so I think Vogel called a lot of plays. He tried to get away from that a little bit since they got off the David West, Roy Hibbert train. I think back then he felt the offense needed a lot of structure and he was trying to go through the post still and all that stuff. So I think what it sounds like is Nate McMillan's just going to give them a lot of freedom and kind of throw these quick, fast guys out there and see what happens.
I'm worried that it's going to
lead. I think
they'll
score more points. I don't know if they'll be more efficient. I think they'll score a lot more points.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Larry Bird really understands the difference between like being more efficient and scoring more points necessarily. But given some of the acquisitions, I do think, I mean, the party line now is, well, they kept Dan Burke, who is the defensive assistant. And so the defense is just going to be just as good as it always was. But what I said on our Over Under podcast the other day was I look at four things that to me were so important in them being, I think, the second best defense in the NBA last year. Paul George is still around, obviously, but Vogel, Jan Mahimi, and George Hill are all going to be gone now. And so I worry that, and McMillan has never really had great defenses in his career. You do have a finite amount of practice time. As you noted, Vogel prioritized defense, perhaps to the detriment of the offense and the amount of freedom that the players felt that they had. So I don't know. I'm a little worried about it. I think that if you just look at their overall resumes as coaches between McMillan and Vogel, I think Vogel has a better resume, and it could be that McMillan has learned from Vogel. It could be that McMillan is just going to be better than he was in Portland and Seattle. And I don't think he was bad in either of those places either. And you know, he's been working with Team USA. So there's some reasons to think that he could be good, but it's to me, that is a little bit of a downgrade until proven differently, although I'm open to the idea that it could end up being an upgrade in time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the offense will definitely be upgraded. Like we say, I don't know if it'll be efficiently upgraded. It will definitely be faster and more prioritized and kind of the identity of the team at this point. And it's just you hope the defense can keep up. It's going to be a downgrade. The question is whether or not the offense can improve more than the defense degrades. And like you say, I mean, there was, in my opinion, Vogel was the reason for the defense. Larry Bird has kind of pushed this agenda, this thought that Dan Burke is the architect of the defense. And I don't know what happens in practice. I don't know who designed these schemes. I don't know who does what. But I know the head coach is the one who kind of puts these into place. He decides the priorities of the team. He's the one who takes Glenn Robinson III off the floor when he messes up a defensive assignment. He's the one who, you know, decides all that stuff. And you can go back. There's not a lot. I want to do kind of an analysis of this because there, but there's just not a lot of teams where the head coach has left and the, let's just call him the defensive coordinator, has stayed. Just doesn't really happen. But Dan Burke's been there forever. He's been there for, 12, 15 years. And you look at Jim O'Brien's defenses. He was the defensive architect of that team. They were not good defenses. The day Vogel got there, they became a good defensive team. They almost beat, but they, was it 1-8 or 2-7? I forget. But that his first year when he took over midseason, they gave the Bulls a hell of a little run. I mean, it was only five games, but Derrick Rose had to kind of go into superhero mode in the fourth quarter of all those games to win. And then the next year, they were excellent defensively. The next 2 years after that, they were number one. Roy Hibbert was, you know, it was kind of laughable that he didn't get any defensive player of the year votes. Everyone kind of was, but he was the new defense. He invented verticality. Hibbert said that Vogel told him to do that. He kind of taught him how to do that. It was what enabled him to stop being this kind of foul prone, low minute guy who was ineffective and become the centerpiece of the best defense in the league for 2 years. So, I mean, I'm not trying to throw shade at Dan Burke. I'm sure he's a wonderful mind and helped create all this. But I just have no real faith that a new coach can come in and run even the same schemes. And you just can't run the same schemes. I mean, they played big. They're not going to play big. They're going to start Thaddeus Young. Vogel's defense was predicated on kind of big guys doing things. Even though David West wasn't the best defender in the world, he was capable of running the schemes and being in the right places all the time. It's just going to be completely different. It's going to be completely different.
Yeah. What do you see as the key strengths of this team this year?
Paul George is one of the best players alive. That's
yeah.
After that, I mean, it's just so hard. Jeff Teague's coming off a career worst year in many ways. Montel's coming off a career worst year. But then again, Jeff Teague shot a career best last year. He was something insane, like 48%, 47% on catch and shoot threes for Atlanta. But he was hurt. And is he going to get back to where he is? Can he coexist? It's real. I think their biggest strength is talent. While they're not the Warriors by any means, they only have Paul George as far as like incredible talent. Paul George, Jeff Teague, Monte Ellis, Thaddeus Young, Miles Turner, Al Jefferson. That's a pretty damn good top six as far as just skill talent goes.
Yeah.
And then even, you know, CJ Miles, Aaron Brooks, Rodney Stuckey, you're starting to get a little shaky there. But I think those guys are all rotation level contributors in the regular season.
Yeah, you know,
I think they go 9-10 deep pretty solidly.
I like the depth as well. I think you could maybe say backup point guard is a little bit of an issue for them, but with the ability of Ellis and to shift there, basically, I think it's not going to be the end of the world. And I think that their depth, they don't really have any players in their rotation, their projected rotation, who should just be bad, you know, and that's an underrated aspect. I also think that just shot creation is going to be a strength for these guys, that, you know, if they get stuck down at the end of the shot clock, there are guys who can create a look that's not going to be awful, whether it's Ellis or George or Teague or Al Jefferson or even Miles Turner can, you know, just run a quick pick and pop and take a mid-range jumper that's an okay look for that point in the shot clock.
That's a great point, because that was heinous under Vogel. I mean, it was Paul George or nothing. David West could do it, but I mean, you know, it is kind of slow David West way. And yeah, I mean, even Paul George, when those were the teams, he was younger and immature and wasn't doing as well. Yeah, like you say, any of those guys can get off a shot any second they want.
How about big weaknesses?
The defense. I mean, it's just, I think it's going to be really, really, really bad.
Like, you think it'll be like worse than average?
So it's hard. I'm coming through a Pacers lens, you know, of having a top five defense for the past 4 years, essentially.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll get under 20th just because Paul George is good enough and Miles Turner is capable. But I think it'll be laughable at times. And I think they're going to be they have a ceiling very, very high for the regular season, but I think they're going to be very exploitable in a playoff series.
Yeah, last year they had the 25th best offense and the third best defense according to Basketball Reference, and I think there was another site that said they're the second best. But it's I don't think the defense is going to be a weakness in a, you know, an absolute sense, but relative to where it's been, I think it could fall off. You know, I think I could see them falling down to being like, you know, 10th or 12th or something. And the offense, I don't necessarily see them in the top half of the league, because I think the two weaknesses that really stand out for me is the first I would say is passing. I don't know that there's anyone on this team you look at as being like a great passer. Ellis can be okay at times, but he's still kind of a shoot first player. George will have some moments where he can find guys in the weak side or in the pick and roll. And Teague is, you know, probably about average, but you don't look at any of these guys and say, hey, this guy's a great passer, or like, hey, we can run guys off screens through the, you know, guys to the high post or something like that. That's one. And then just
that's my Pacers bias again. They haven't had a good passer since Jamal Tinsley on the roster. So it's one of those things I just presume doesn't exist, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for a lot of these guys, it's like, all right, if you stop them, then they'll pass it. But there's nobody on this team that you think of as like pass first.
No, 100%.
So, yeah, and just like overall ball movement, you know, I foresee a lot of, unless McMillan really changes the schemes, which, you know, and he had a pretty ISO heavy approach in Portland. But, you know, it's not like you can give it to somebody and then, all right, we're going to run a bunch of guys off screens and this guy can make the right decision and find someone, or, you know, they get guys cutting back door or whatever. So that's one. And then just the overall shooting on the team as well, I think is going to be a little bit of a problem. I think they could struggle a little bit for spacing. And there's nobody on this team really who, you know, ever in their career has been much above average from just a true shooting percentage standpoint. So I think that's why I really struggle to see them getting into the top half of the league in offense, because it's just there are not players on this team. And yeah, you can say, all right, we mash all these guys together, everyone else can take more efficient shots. Well, Ellis, for example, last year he took less shots, you would think they'd be more efficient looks, but yet he was still very inefficient. So I think you have a lot of those kind of guys who I don't think necessarily can scale up in efficiency as they scale down in usage the way you might see from some other guys.
Yeah, no, I think again, if T can make threes, and, you know, I don't think he's going to hit 40% again, but if he can hit 35%, that'll be big. But yeah, it's slim pickings on the roster for shooting. I think there's a potential for trade. I mean, that was one of the things that was kind of discussed throughout the offseason, once they got Jeff Teague, because of the obvious duplication issues and non-shooting and smallness issues with him and Monte being a backcourt. So I think it's still possible that would happen. I mean, obviously it wouldn't be right away. Probably it'd be later in the season once it proves it can't work. But yeah, I mean, they really could use another shooter or three.
All right. Best case scenario, things go pretty well. We talked about some of the guys who could improve. They do it. What do you think is the best case scenario, both in the regular season and playoffs, for these guys?
I think they have an upside at the two seed. Just because I think it's very, very open. You know, a lot of people like the Celtics. I guess they're probably definitely worse than Toronto. Toronto, I guess, would have to have some injuries for that to happen. But, you know, I think they can be in that semi-scary upper echelon of the East, whatever that means. I understand all the offensive issues you're saying, but I just think from a talent perspective alone, is especially if they can get out and run, if they go small a lot and they get running, I can just see a lot of, you know, steals, long rebounds, pushing it, and just a lot of dunks in transition. And I can see lobs in the half court to Fad and things going best case in that respect. I don't think they're going to be a great playoff team regardless, because I think there's exploitable matchups on defense and they're not quite as versatile as they need to be, as far as the thing keeps saying, the duplication issues with Monte and Teague. But, you know, I think they can win 50-something games.
Yeah, I could – if everything breaks right, like you're right, there is talent. Maybe George could be even better. Maybe Miles Turner just turns into a monster, especially on defense, and the defense doesn't decline as much as I'm forecasting that it will. And maybe someone like Young can have a great season on both ends too. Teague shoots 40% on threes again. He did it last year. Ellis, his second year in a new system, does a little bit better. I could see them getting into the low 50s and potentially being the two seed, depending on what happens with Boston and Toronto. I think that is relatively unlikely. I would say that their ceiling, best case scenario, which I've talked about on a lot of these pods, for them is less likely maybe than some of the other teams' best case scenarios, because I just think that these pieces do not fit together as well as Larry Bird might hope. You know, they are far less than the sum of their points per game. You know, you could look at it that way. But yeah, I mean, I think there is the talent here. You have that wild card in Turner and George being 2 years removed from the injury. Like, those guys could just end up being so good that these weaknesses aren't going to matter What about worst case scenario outside of just, you know, a catastrophic Paul George injury, but, you know, just kind of things don't work that well. What do you see as the worst case?
In theory, I think there should, the talent, the sum of the parts thing should be enough where it can't be horrible. Like, I don't think they should, there should be no situation where those are your top six players, you know, where Al Jefferson or Monte Ellis are your sixth best player, or Thad Young is your sixth best player, and you should lose more than 35, or should not, you should win 35 games at least.
Yeah, I see that. I see it about the same way too. And it's interesting because normally when I do my prediction, and I mean, people who listen to the over under pod know I pick them for slightly under their 43.5 over under. And normally you would say, well, all right, you're kind of halfway in between the best case and the worst case scenario would be your prediction. But for this team, I just think that the best case scenario is a little bit more, though possible, is a little bit more unlikely than maybe for most teams. As I said, what would you have as your predicted record this year?
I think I'm pretty optimistic. I think they'll get to 47, 48 wins. I'm not good at math, so I can't tell you how many losses that is. But
yeah, that's we always leave out the losses part of that.
I think they would, just because it's the same reason I think they'll have a low ceiling. I don't have a complete faith in Nate McMillan. I think the defense is going to fall off. I've got a lot of questions, but I just think there's enough talent in that top six that they're going to roll over all the tanking teams and even kind of the middle tier teams. You know, the well-coached teams that are good, like Boston, the teams that are just obviously good, like Cleveland and you know, half the teams out west and Toronto, they're going to have problems with. But teams that are just in a slight disarray, I think they'll just be able to run through them just on talent alone.
Yeah, maybe that's true. To me, I another way to look at it, too, is I think that they'll probably be maybe like the 10th best defense and the 20th best offense. That's kind of how I see it. And so that's sort of how I end up with around 500 for me. So if you think they're going to get to 47 or 48, what's better than in terms of offense and defense than where I see it?
I actually have that kind of flipped. I think their offense is going to be fine. Like I said, I just think they're going to score. They have scorers. I don't know how it's going to work. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but I just think they're going to put points on the board. And I think Paul George is that good. I think we're going to see a career year from him. I think we're going to see not quite what we saw in November last year, not quite what we saw in Toronto, because almost no one can do that for a full season. But we're not going to see the fall off. And I think he's felt a little overwhelmed at times. You've heard it in his tone. I wouldn't say he's said anything disparaging of George Hill, but he sounded very happy to have Jeff T around. His whole career, except for last year with Monte Ellis, he hasn't had much help. He's had to do a lot by himself. And I think he is kind of looking at being that LeBron role a little bit, where he knows he can kind of just like pass off and like run for dunks and stuff. And he knows that those possessions are coming where he can just finish a play as opposed to like having to start everything.
Yeah, so you kind of see it as more maybe like they have the 10th best offense and 15th best defense, and that's how they get to like 47, 48 wins.
Or maybe like more like 12 and 17, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or something like, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they had, I think, a 46-win point differential last year, though obviously the cast is much, much different.
I would say, even if you want to kind of say like they're going to like be the same as last year in many ways, they were terrible at the end of games last year. They came close to almost missing the playoffs, but they, with about, I don't know, they lost something crazy. Like, they had like one of the most in the whole league amount of like within 5-point games, and they lost like 15 games by like 3 points or something like that. I don't know the exact stat, but they just completely dropped the ball at the end of games so many times. And some of that I got put on Frank Vogel, bad offense, perhaps bad schemes, blah, 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 blah. But some of it was just bad luck. They if you take that many last second shots, you're going to make a few of them. They just happen to miss them all. So they should have had a few more wins than they did last year. And I think, you know, you can just add to that better offense and get to where I'm predicting a 47, 48.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Let us know where we can follow you on Twitter and keep up with your work.
At 8.9 seconds. It's at 8PTS9SECS on Twitter, and then 8.9seconds.com. Find us all there.
Yeah, and of course, for those who may have missed the reference or not Pacers fans, that's goes back to that Reggie Miller in, what was that, game one in 1995? Is that when? That's the series that they beat them, right? Reggie Miller at the 8 points in 9 seconds, which was, would you say that is the best moment, the greatest moment in Pacers history?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. It's definitely the most memorable. I mean, that was the most iconic of the rivalry with the Knicks. They ended up making the finals in 2000 and gave the Lakers a little more challenge than people remember, but you know, they essentially got run over by Shaq and Kobe, so not as cool as 8 points in 9 seconds.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, thanks so much for coming on, and we'll be back with more season outlooks tomorrow. Thanks for listening.